The Vicatra Podcast, Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Vicatra AI. Welcome back, everyone. Today we are tackling, well, a really big name, Karl Marx. He's someone whose influence is just massive, but his actual ideas, they often get kind of lost under layers of history, politics, failed states.
That's so true. Mention Marx and, you know, people immediately jump to Soviet Russia or communism. But our goal today is a bit different. We're using the philosopher Peter Singer's Clear Eye Take as our guide.
Right. His book Marx, yeah. A very short introduction.
Exactly. And we're trying to do a kind of intellectual cleanup. We want to figure out, okay, putting aside the political baggage, what, if anything, is still genuinely valuable in Marx's thinking today?
So the mission is clarity, not taking sides. We really need to pull apart the strands here, separate his moral critique, especially around alienation, from the economic predictions that, well, didn't really pan out.
And Singer really helps with that separation. He basically makes the case that the Marx who still speaks to us is the moral philosopher, the guy outraged by the human cost of industrial capitalism, not necessarily the economic profit.
He helps us look past the political isms and see the underlying ethical concerns.
Precisely. The concern for human dignity and freedom.
Okay, let's unpack this, maybe starting with the guide himself. Peter Singer, who is he?
Right. Singer is a pretty well-known Australian moral philosopher. He teaches bioethics at Princeton, famous for his work on utilitarianism.
That's the idea of maximizing good, minimizing suffering.
Yeah, exactly. And books like Animal Liberation, his work on global poverty, effective altruism, he's influential.
So why is he the person to guide us through Marx? Seems an unlikely pairing.
Well, that's actually the point. Singer is absolutely not a Marxist. He states that clearly. So he comes at it with, let's say, a critical detachment. No ideological axe to grind. He doesn't need Marx to be right about communism succeeding.
Okay, so he has distance. But what makes his perspective useful beyond just being critical?
It's his philosophical focus. Because he's a moral philosopher concerned with suffering and well-being, he's really well suited to dig into the ethical heart of Marx's critique. You know, the stuff about justice, freedom, what it means to live a flourishing human life.
Less getting bogged down in, like, the economic formulas of Das Kapital.
Exactly. He zooms in on the human element, the moral outrage, which he argues is Marx's most powerful legacy. He's looking for what's still relevant for us.
Got it. So, through Singer's lens, what's the core argument about Marx's lasting contribution?
The main takeaway is that Marx's genius lies in his analysis of how our economic system, how we work, what we produce, shapes pretty much everything else. Right. Our consciousness, our society, our sense of freedom, and especially his condemnation of how that system alienates us.
Estranges us, you said, from ourselves, from our work.
Yeah. And to really get that, we have to touch on Hegel first. Georg Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel. Big German philosopher.
Right. Marx was heavily influenced by him, but then kind of flipped him on his head.
Precisely. Hegel had this idea of the dialectic history moving forward through conflict. Thesis, antithesis, synthesis, like a cosmic argument resolving itself.
Okay, the engine of change.
Yes. But for Hegel, the driving force was something abstract, spiritual. He called it Geist, or spirit, this sort of unfolding consciousness driving history.
Sounds pretty abstract.
It is. And Marx, living amidst the smokestacks and poverty of the 19th century, looked at that and basically said, no, 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 you get it backwards.
So Marx flipped it. What did he put in place of spirit?
Concrete reality, material conditions, the economy, how things are actually made, who owns the factories, who does the work, class conflict. That's what drives history, according to Marx.
So our social existence, our economic reality, shapes our ideas and beliefs, not the other way around.
Exactly. That's the core of historical materialism. It's probably his single biggest philosophical contribution. The material world comes first.
And that foundation leads us straight into this concept of alienation, which Singer highlights as maybe the most enduring part of Marx.
Definitely. And this is where it feels, well, surprisingly modern. We talk about feeling alienated all the time, but Marx gave it a specific structure, especially concerning work under capitalism. He broke it down into four types.
Okay, let's walk through them. Can we connect them to, say, experiences people might have today, like in an office job or the gig economy?
Absolutely. First, alienation from the product of your labor. Think about it. You might code software, write reports, design something, but you don't own it. It belongs to the company. It exists outside of you, maybe even used in ways you disagree with. It confronts you as something separate, maybe even hostile.
I can see that. You pour yourself into something and then it's just Gone. Belongs to someone else. Okay, what's the second type?
Alienation from the act of labor itself. Marx thought meaningful work, free creative activity, was central to being human. But under capitalism, for most people, work isn't that. It's forced. It's often boring, repetitive drudgery you do just to get a paycheck.
So you don't feel yourself at work. You feel alive outside of work.
Right. Work is just a means to survive, not an end in itself. That leads to the third type. Alienation from our species being, our essential human nature.
Species being.
Yeah. His term for what makes us human, our capacity for free, conscious, creative activity. Capitalism, he argued, reduces this rich potential to just one thing. Selling your ability to work, your labor power, as a commodity in the market, just to stay alive, it shrinks us.
Okay, that's quite deep. And the fourth?
Alienation from other human beings. Instead of cooperation and community, capitalism pits us against each other, competing for jobs, for promotions, for clients. Relationships become transactional, based on self-interest and market logic, rather than, you know, genuine human connection.
Wow. Okay, those four are pretty powerful critiques. They describe a feeling of disconnection that I think a lot of people can relate to, even now.
And that's Samer's point. This moral critique of dehumanization, this analysis of alienation, still resonates, regardless of whether Marx's economic predictions came true.
Which brings us back to historical materialism, because that framework, the base determining the superstructure, was also the foundation for those predictions that, well, failed. Yeah. Singer insists we have to be clear about that failure, right?
Absolutely essential. Remember the core idea, the economic base, how we produce stuff, who owns what, the class structure, dictates the superstructure.
Right.
Laws, politics, religion, culture, even our ideas.
It is not the consciousness of men that determines their being, but on the contrary, their social being that determines their consciousness. That's the famous line.
That's the one. A powerful lens. But it led Marx to make some very specific, very confident predictions about the future of capitalism. And this is where the scientific part of his project ran into trouble.
Let's be blunt about the failures. What were the big ones?
Okay, first big one. Capitalism's inevitable collapse. Marx saw internal contradictions, like the tendency of the rate of profit to fall, that he thought would surely destroy the system. Well, it hasn't collapsed. It's proven incredibly adaptable, resilient, constantly changing form.
Right. And the second prediction?
The progressive impoverishment of the proletariat. He predicted workers in advanced capitalist countries would get poorer and poorer, leading to revolution. In reality, especially in the 20th century, living standards for workers in many of those countries actually rose significantly, partly due to unions, welfare states, etc.
So the revolution didn't happen where he expected it either. It happened in agrarian societies like Russia and China, not industrial Britain or Germany.
Exactly. And then there's the theoretical linchpin within Das Kapital itself, the labor theory of value, LTV. This was crucial for his economic analysis.
Explain the LTV simply.
Basically, it says the economic value of a thing is determined only by the average amount of labor time needed to produce it. Profit, for Marx, was essentially the surplus value created by workers, but kept by the capitalists' unpaid labor time.
But modern economics doesn't really use the LTV anymore, does it?
No, it's largely been superseded. Mainstream economics shifted to theories based on marginal utility, the idea that value is subjective, linked to how useful or desirable the next unit of something is to the consumer, and also influenced by scarcity and demand.
So if the LTV doesn't quite hold up, the whole mechanism Marx described for how capitalism generates profit and crisis get shaky.
It fundamentally undermines the scientific certainty of his predictions about capitalism's inevitable trajectory. The economic engine wasn't quite what he thought it was.
Okay, so we have Marx the flawed economic prophet, but Marx the enduring moral critic. What are the key takeaways Singer wants us to hold on to? Why does this still matter?
Okay, theme one, ideology. The idea that the dominant ideas in society tend to reflect and serve the interest of the dominant class, that's still an incredibly powerful tool for critical thinking.
It pushes you to ask, whenever you hear a certain argument or narrative being pushed, especially in politics or media cui bono, who benefits from this way of thinking?
Exactly. Like analyzing how certain economic policies are framed, whose interests are really being served by that language. It's a lens for seeing power at work in ideas.
Okay, what's another key theme?
Theme two is confronting the gap between vision and reality. There's this huge, tragic disconnect between Marx's own humanist goals ending alienation, creating a society where people can flourish, and the actual historical outcomes of regimes that claimed his name. The 20th century saw brutal dictatorships arise under the banner of Marxism.
That's a crucial and sobering point. We can't ignore that history.
Singer forces us to grapple with that tension, the inspiring vision, the disastrous results of the attempts to implement it his way.
Let's talk about some specific quotes or ideas that really capture Marxist spirit. Singer highlights a few. What about, "The philosophers have only interpreted the world in various ways. The point is to change it."
Ah, yeah, that's pure Marx. It's his call for praxis theory intertwined with action. He wasn't content just understanding the world. He demanded revolutionary action to transform it based on that understanding. It's about getting your hands dirty.
No ivory tower philosophy for him. Then there's the opener of the Communist Manifesto. "The history of all hitherto existing society is the history of class struggles."
So concise, so sweeping. It frames all of human history as this relentless conflict between opposing economic classes, masters and slaves, lords and serfs, and in his time, the bourgeoisie, owners of capital, and the proletariat workers. That conflict is the engine driving historical change.
And maybe the most famous line describing the communist ideal, "From each according to his ability to each according to his needs."
Yeah, that's the utopian vision, a future society beyond capitalism, beyond scarcity, where people contribute freely based on what they can do and receive what they need without money or markets mediating everything. It's an incredibly powerful moral ideal, even if the path there proved, well, problematic.
So thinking about practical application for you listening, how can someone use these ideas today beyond just understanding history?
Well, take the alienation framework. You can absolutely use it to analyze your own work life. Ask yourself, does my job allow for creativity? Do I feel connected to the final product or service? Is it just about the paycheck, or is there something more fulfilling? It gives you language to pinpoint sources of dissatisfaction.
That's very direct. What else?
Think about consumerism through the lens of what Marx called commodity fetishism. Why do we attach so much identity and status to brands and objects? Marx would say it's because the social relationships, the human labor behind the product, get hidden. The object seems to have a magical value of its own.
So we try to find meaning in buying stuff rather than in, say, creative work or community.
That's the critique. It encourages you to question why we desire the things we desire and how the market shapes those desires. And finally, apply that ideology critique to the media you consume.
Be a critical reader or viewer.
Exactly. When you encounter news or political analysis, ask, what underlying economic interest might be shaping this story? Whose perspective is centered? Whose is ignored? It helps you read between the lines.
So reflecting on all this, what was the most surprising thing for you going through Singer's analysis again?
For me, it's really reinforcing how Marx's motivation seems fundamentally ethical. Yes, he tried to build a science of history, but beneath it all was this deep moral outrage at the dehumanizing effects of the economic system he saw. It wasn't just cold analysis. It was driven by a passion for human dignity.
Yeah, I get that. And for me, what really stands out is how Singer positions Marx. Not as someone who had all the answers, far from it, but as someone who asked profoundly important and still relevant questions. Questions about freedom, fairness, what a truly human life looks like in a society dominated by economic forces.
Right. We might reject his answers, his roadmap, but the questions themselves, they stick around. They still challenge us.
Which leads to maybe the final big question for you, the listener, to ponder.
Okay, so if we accept that Marx's critique of alienation still has real teeth today, that it points to genuine problems in modern work and society, but we also know his proposed solutions led to terrible outcomes, what now? What kind of framework can we use today to seriously address the moral and human costs of our current economic system without repeating the disasters of the past?
That's the challenge he leaves us with, something to think about. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acacha Foundation.